Those were two etudes by Alexander Scriabin, his Opus 2, number 1, and Opus 8, number 2. Vladimir Horovitz performed here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we have with us on this portion of the show Anne Hylas and Charlotte Arnstein, who are both members of the Tuesday Morning Music Club in Champaign, Urbana. And they've been around for an awfully long time, and several of their members are going to be performing a short program Thursday for free at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. There's a music series that goes on there every week of the year at noon for about an hour, and this one is called 96 Years Making Music Together, and I guess that title gives away what would have been my first question, which is how long you guys been around. Now, it should be said that neither of you has been around for 96 years.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. Anne and Charlotte, thanks for coming in.
It's good to be with you.
So, Anne, you gave me a brief printed summary of the music club, this music club, but I understand that there's a larger movement of music clubs across the country, around the world, or what?
There's been a long history of music clubs. In this country, they began in the 1840s with singing clubs in Boston and various places on the East Coast, especially. And the movement toward music clubs in a more general sense started in Maine. There was a Rossini club that actually had aims that were very similar to ours, and it was founded in 1868, I think. And by the 1890s, there were about 45 women's music clubs, and these were mainly because women didn't have performing opportunities in a professional sense, but they loved music. So 35 of them were invited to a national exposition, the World Exposition in Chicago, by the wife of the conductor of the Chicago Symphony, Theodore Thomas, and they agreed that bringing music to the community as well as performing among themselves would be a good aim, and that really leads into many, many music clubs being formed over the next 30 years, and our club was part of that movement. There were hundreds of clubs by then,
and these were all mostly.
They were for women. They weren't all women's clubs. There were music study clubs, for example, in Iowa City and Michigan City, Indiana. I know those because my grandfather and aunt started one. And they actually not only studied pieces and composers, but they brought most of the community concerts. They brought outside artists, the Paderewski or Gabrilovich or the big Fritz Kreisler. When people went outside of the main cities, they were invited by these music clubs and presented concerts. So that was a component of most music clubs then. Our club started around 1913 and 14, and the two aims were to bring music to the community and to improve the performance of the members.
So what happens, Charlotte, at a meeting of the club? You call them meetings? You call them...
We have meetings on Tuesday mornings every 2 weeks during the academic year. And we have a printed program. And we have officers who bring the meeting to order, and then the program proceeds as printed. And we don't stop for coffee afterwards. That's it. We're not a chat club. But this is one way of getting to know all the musicians in Champaign-Urbana. Well, I moved here in 1968, and I knew there was a music club out there somewhere, and I desperately wanted to join it as a performer and a mother of young children and so on. I wanted to get back into playing again, and I happened to be sitting on the train next to Dorothy O'Donnell. I don't know whether Anne remembered her or not, but she was one of the very oldest members. I was taking my son up to Chicago for piano lessons. And next thing I knew, I was auditioning for that club. You have to audition or you have to be heard in concert in order to get in. And they're a serious bunch of women. I will say, at one point, I tried to bring men into the club. And it split the club right in two. there was quite a dust-up, and we voted on it. And I could see the club was so evenly divided that it was just as well that we dropped it because it was interfering with what we really wanted to do. And I was surprised at who wanted men and who didn't want men. Didn't have anything to do with age or education or where you came from. You just never knew who really were afraid of having men in the club. They would be discouraged from playing. And there was one very influential lady who was afraid her husband would be asked to join, and she didn't want him to join her club. So we are still a club for women, although we have men perform as guests all the time.
Oh, really?
Yes, and people like my husband who come to the club when I play for moral support and all sorts of things.
So men can come just to listen, but
the men can come as invited guests, yeah. And they also play as members of quartets or as singers or as accompanists. If you happen to be working up a big program and your accompanist happens to be a man, you bring him to the club to perform it. I think the club really enables a lot of people who are working on their degrees to come and try out everything in a different venue away from the university. So it isn't just a university club. There are all sorts of reasons for belonging.
We have members in their 20s, but we also have active members in their late 80s. And I think it's interesting that people in their 60s, 70s, 80s still feel that they can improve and that... I can tell you a couple of stories, actually, about this has nothing to do with our club, although I have taught 75-year-olds in town here. But Nathan Milstein was a friend of my father's, and he came to the house, and he was already in his 70s.
Nathan Milstein, famous violinist.
Yes, yeah. And he was very excited to tell my father that he had found a new method of holding the bow that was much better. And my father, when he was in his late 70s, told me the same thing. He had found a new way to hold the violin that was going to help him. And so musicians do keep trying.
We're always learning. We're always learning, if we're smart.
I'm assuming, Charlotte, from what you said earlier, that that you couldn't have an all-male string quartet play on your program. There would have to be some women in there.
Got something in mind. That's all right with me. But I retired as a troublemaker. Usually it's a matter of performing with a group that is part of the club, so I can't quite picture a string quartet, unless it's a guest performance. I will say on at least a couple of occasions, when the program was short, I threw my son and his violin partner in there. And they had just given a recital at the university, and the violinist had a Stradivarius violin that the string players all wanted to hear. And so I asked if they could come and play for the club, and they played for about 10 minutes, so nobody objected then. But we're always eager to learn things, and that was a learning experience.
Well, speaking of men... Anne Hylas, you have a male husband, of course, and he is a pianist on the University of Illinois faculty, and he's going to be one of the performers on Thursday.
I definitely would not call him an accompanist.
Well, he is a pianist.
Not Mendelssohn.
In front of certain people who might be called accompanists, you don't want to use that term anyway. Rohan da Silva, one of those people who's been here on campus a couple of times, and he really bristles at that term. Collaborative artist or collaborative pianist is his term, and others as well. In any event, one of the pieces you're playing on the program, I'm not going to give away the exact movement. I'm going to play a different movement than what you're doing. This is from the first of two trios for violin, cello, and piano by Felix Mendelssohn. And you're going to play the second slower movement, I understand. And this is the third faster movement, one of the faster movements. It's the scherzo. It will be performed by yourself and Bill Hylas and on cello Amy Flores as part of the program by the Tuesday Morning Music Club in Champaign this Thursday at noon. And we have two of the members with us on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. That was sort of a typical piece for Felix Mendelssohn, fleet scherzo, very rapid motion that he's made. He made sort of a specialty. It's from his first piano trio, that was the third movement, played here by the Claremont Trio. And you can hear a different movement from that piece played at Thursday's concert by members of the Tuesday Morning Music Club in Champaign. The concert will be at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the main Carl Clinic campus in Urbana on University Avenue. The program's called 96 Years Making Music Together, and the performers for that piece will be Ann Hylas playing violin, Amy Flores playing cello, and Bill Hylas, the pianist, for that performance. Ann is with us on Live and Local here this portion of the show, along with Charlotte Arnstein. Earlier, we played a couple of Scriabin piano etudes, and Phyllis Croissant is one of the performers in the program as well. Charlotte, you're going to play a Scriabin etude on that concert.
Yes.
And
Opus 2, number 1.
Is that one of the ones I played?
I didn't hear
first
one.
As a matter of fact, that is the first one I played.
Oh, I missed
it. I didn't know which one you're going to do, and that's just happens to be the first one on this recording with Vladimir Horowitz. One of the ones that I actually recognize. There's a lot of Scriabin etudes I wouldn't. What made you choose Scriabin? He can be sort of a tricky composer to sort out.
Well, he's dreadful for small hands, I'll tell you.
I'm gathering from that comment your hands are not large.
My hands are very small, so it takes a lot of adjustment. I don't think Horowitz would have the same problems. He's very romantic, very Russian romantic. And my son, who's a concert pianist, is very good at that kind of music, whereas I'm more Bach, Beethoven, and Bartok kind of person. But I wanted a short piece. I'm taking this to a piano workshop in Scotland in August, so I've played it for the club this year. That's one of the functions they serve. And I needed a short, gorgeous piece, and that's a short, gorgeous piece.
Is Scriabin something you had been working on? Or
no.
I mean, if, since
never
you said
played
it was a...
anything by him
really?
Before. And I did invite my son in to play it for me so I would make sure I wasn't making too many boo-boos. And, of course, he played it 3 times as well as I did, which was
another
spur.
There's plenty of other short, gorgeous pieces.
Not by Scriabin.
So the workshop, it had to be Scriabin? The workshop you're going to has to be Scriabin?
No, I'm taking the first movement of the Schumann Piano Concerto and a very short Chopin etude, and then I needed one more. And I didn't want to spend a lot of time memorizing it because I memorize my pieces. So I picked Scriabin, and boy, was that hard to memorize.
But I'm still trying to get it. Why did you pick Scriabin if you'd never worked on him before, particularly if he's difficult for your hands?
I can tell you, I heard it played at the workshop I went to. That's another reason you go to these places, not only to improve yourself, but to hear what other people are doing. And I've learned more pieces that way. I heard somebody else do it.
And you just wanted to try
and
that.
And I thought, if she can do it, I can do it.
We won't say who she is, right? Yeah. This was somewhere out of town, I gather?
This was in Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
And the recital is in their University of Edinburgh Concert Hall on their 9-foot Steinway Grand, which is just the most wonderful piano in the world. And I've been trying to persuade my fellow music teachers for years to go there in the summer, but they're a little bit shy about going abroad to go to a piano workshop.
So you teach piano privately?
I did until my husband retired from the university, and then I decided I wanted to retire, first of all, so I would have more time for practice. I wanted to raise my level of performance, and also I wanted to be able to travel when my husband traveled, so I stopped teaching.
And Anne, you are very actively teaching.
I'm still teaching.
Violin,
I enjoy
viola.
Teaching.
Well, I enjoy the fact that you do teach because, you know, I conduct the youth orchestra in town, and the youth orchestra is the beneficiary of your teaching because we have a lot of your students.
Well, thank you. It goes both ways. I find that once the kids get in the orchestra, I mean, they have to get to a certain level to audition for you, but once they get in, their sight reading and their playing really improves dramatically. So
that's the idea.
I've always been grateful. And that actually is another function of our Tuesday morning musical club, that we try to support other ensembles in town that we think could use some help financially. And the youth orchestra is one of them, the conservatory's youth orchestra, and as well as the CU Symphony, and I think the Prairie Ensemble we've given to, and various other groups. And this concert on Thursday, we are going to turn the money that we would get over to these grants that we give local organizations. So we're doing it as volunteers.
So the concert is always these concerts at the Breast Cancer Institute are always free to listeners, but the Institute and Carl do support the performers.
Yes. Barbara Hedlund has been wonderful about organizing them. It's a lot of work for her. And Carl has been terrific in supporting this.
Well, and she does a great job of, I should have brought in the schedule of some of the ones coming up. And I don't have my calendar doesn't go out that far. But she's got a wonderful variety of performances that do go on in that program. It's just an hour every Thursday at noon. Let's look at the rest of the program here. I mentioned inadvertently Phyllis Croissant, who is a pianist, I gather.
Mm-hmm.
Well, obviously.
Phyllis is an interesting person because she actually is a professor of, I think, kinesiology down at Eastern Illinois University. Hmm. And so she's an amateur pianist who studied with one of our other members, Deb Suter. So she plays really for the love of it.
Huh? I didn't realize she was a professor of kinesiology.
takes all types, right? Well, I know her son used to play in the youth orchestra, as a matter of fact.
Is that Matthew?
Yeah. And now he teaches at Community Center for the Arts. And teaches, I think, guitar and other things over there. But Phyllis is going to be playing a Dave Brubeck solo for piano, and also playing some music by Ravel, not typically heard by this combination of instruments, a habanera, in this case, for bassoon and piano, Terry Meyer performing. And then there's another man performing on the program, a husband and wife duo again here, just as Bill and Ann Hylas are performing in the Mendelssohn. And it's Joellen de Vilbiss and Reed Alexander. They're going to be playing some excerpts from a wonderful piece by Gabriel Fauré, his Dolly Suite. And I thought I'd play the opening movement of that. I love this piece. This also exists in Fauré. Is it Fauré's orchestration? Do you know offhand, Charlotte, for orchestra?
You say, was the Dolly Suite for orchestra?
Well, I mean, it's for piano, there's also an orchestral version, but I don't know if Fauré made the orchestral version.
I don't know.
Maybe I'll look that up while we're listening to this. It's the opening movement from the Dali Suite of Fauré. Performers here, also a man-woman duo, Laurence Fromentin and Dominique Plancade. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was the opening movement of the Dali Suite of Gabriel Fauré, and I was out there looking to find out the answer to my own question, which was whether Fauré orchestrated it himself from the piano two piano original, and in fact he did not. Henri Rabaud was the name of the person who orchestrated that, but we heard the original for two pianos, Laurence Fromentin and Dominique Plancade. And actually, I always get confused, Charlotte, when somebody says piano duo, does that generally mean piano four hands or two pianos?
Good question. I prefer piano two hands or piano four hands, and that just really ties it right down.
Yeah, this is always confusing. I mean, so do we know if Joellen and Reed Alexander are going to be performing with two pianos? I only know of one piano over there.
I would suspect it's one piano.
One piano, four hands.
They usually
do it on one piano. Yeah.
On that piece?
In general, when they perform, most of their pieces should be forehand.
People should just say that, and then people like me wouldn't be able to have to ask the question. We're talking with Charlotte Arnstein and Anne Hylas about the Tuesday Morning Music Club in Champaign, beginning its 97th year, and members of the group performing this Thursday in Urbana at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute. That's at noon. On Thursday. Free program. How many women are in the local? Do you call it a local chapter? I mean, is this a chapter of larger music clubs or just its own music?
No, this is an independent,
club.
And we have 32 active members, which means performing members, and 16 associate members who support the club and come to meetings, but for one reason or other, they don't perform. Some of them
Want to be required to perform.
Yeah.
We are required. If we're active members, we have to perform.
Some of them are teaching and their schedules don't permit it. So they temporarily go on an associate basis. And then we also have honorary members. The president's wives are honorary members.
Meaning of the university.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we have
six of them. Whether or not they
have anything
musical about them?
Yes, pretty much.
Sometimes they invite us to come to the president's house because
they do want
to hear our music. So we know which ones are musical and which ones aren't.
That is a fair turn. So if somebody wants to be involved in the music club, what time do you meet on Tuesdays?
Well, Tuesday mornings at 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock for an hour, two hours?
And there are a lot of people who have to get children out of kindergarten and so on and have to leave by 11:30. So we try to have the program over by then. And if we have a business meeting, it's just as short as we could make it. And so I'd say between 50 minutes and an hour and 15 minutes is sort of ideal for us. We do nowadays encourage people to play whole sonatas. When I was first invited in, we only played movements of sonatas. And I didn't like that because if I got a whole sonata up, I wanted to play the whole sonata. And that slowly changed. But we do have to watch that time.
And so somebody's in charge of the program to decide getting the music pieces together?
We have a set of officers, and I'm president for the coming year. which is one of the easier offices because all I have to do is show up and start the meeting and lead the little bit afterward. But the real workhorse is the vice president, who is program chair and organizes all the programs.
And if somebody wants to get in, I know you said earlier that there is not audition involved. How would they go about doing that?
We actually have a membership committee who actively looks for people, and because we do like to replenish the group. And if they contact me or any member, any of us can sponsor the person to audition for the group. And that audition can be as part of a chamber music group. Most people do it that way.
So do you want to give out some sort of contact information in case anybody listening here says, hey, I want to get involved in that. I didn't even know you guys were around.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm in the telephone book under Walter Arnstein. You can call me up. Anne's in the telephone book under Anne and Bill Hylas. You can call her up.
You can email at W-H-E-I-L-E-S at illinois.edu.
W-H-E-I-L-E-S at illinois.edu. Well, I appreciate you, both of your coming and joining us on the show. We have coming up a discussion of a very interesting project of Shakespeare for girls called the Viola Project. And I pulled off of our shelves some music by Dave Brubeck. Now, if I happen to hit the right piece that Phyllis Croissant is going to be playing on Thursday, that would be amazing because this is actually, I confess, I don't think I've heard this piece, so we're going to play it and find out what it's like. But it's his quartet here, actually not his usual quartet, a different kind of quartet. But it's a tune named after another well-known jazz pianist, Marion McPartland, from a disc called So What's New with Dave Brubeck on piano, Bobby Militello on either sax or flute. Jack Six is the bassist, Randy Jones the drummer. And my guests in this portion of Live and Local, Anne Hylas and Charlotte Arnstein of the Tuesday Morning Music Club in Champaign, and they're performing Thursday at noon at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute on the main Carl Clinic campus in Urbana from 12 to about 1 o'clock, and it's a free program. Thanks to both of you for coming in. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here's some music by Dave Brubeck on FM 90.9. Music by Dave Brubeck called Marion McPartland, named after that wonderful pianist who hosts, well, I was going to say she hosts Marion McPartland's Piano Jazz, which in fact she does, and I was going to say we run it on live on the WILL FM, but we don't anymore, I'm sorry to say. We don't have our Friday evening and Saturday evening non-classical shows. We're all classical except for our additional news programs that we started in April. In the mornings and at late afternoons. You are listening to Live and Local. Dave Brubeck, the pianist in this performance with alto sax player Bobby Militello and bass player Jack Six and drummer Randy Jones. And this is Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. I'm Kevin Kelly. Coming up, a discussion of something called the Viola Project. Support for our show on WILL comes in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with a wide array of foods from around the world, including cheeses, olives, spices, hot sauces, olive oils, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. And I might as well say many thanks to the friends of WILL who support this station with your financial contributions. Some other musical and theatrical events that you can go see and hear. I guess it's all musical on my, almost all musical on my list for the next couple of days. Joni Dreyer and Dave Cooper are performing tonight at 5:30 at Kickapoo Landing at Kickapoo State Park in Oakwood. That's a free program, part of their Tuesday and Friday evening music series. There's a bluegrass jam this evening at Lincoln Square Mall in Urbana. That is at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow night is the weekly Irish traditional music session at Bentley's Pub in Champaign. That is also 7 o'clock. In fact, Joni Dreyer and Dave Cooper are also at Senders Pub then tomorrow night in Champaign. That's from 7:30 to 10:30. Josh Spence and Billy Galt playing at Blues Brews and Barbecue at the Cherry Jam, which is a music series for the summer in Urbana. And the Prairieland Dixie Jazz Band is playing for the Downtown Lunch series in Bloomington. Unfortunately, I don't have additional information on that, but you can probably find that out if you're in that area especially. Next up, this Viola Project is going to be happening for local girls this Saturday from 9:30 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon at the U of I Champaign County Extension Office on Country Fair Drive in Champaign, presenting Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare's play for girls age 12 to 18. And there are some spots left, which is why we're having this little feature on the project today. It's something I hadn't heard of before, but it sounded interesting. Jill Rannenbarger, I believe, is the one. You must have sent it to me, Jill.
Yes.
Through email. And Jill is with us, as you could tell, that she actually answered my question there, and it brought her daughter, Emma. And another person, and Emma was on our show in the fall. When were you on the I'm losing track of time.
In the fall, November, probably.
And what was that for?
That was to promote Little Women.
Little Women, which was by which of the theater projects you're involved in?
That was put on at the CDW Theater Company, and actually my mom directed it. So.
CDW, Creative Dramatics Workshop in Sydney.
Yes.
Right. And then Emily Pollocky, were you here for both that session and another one, right?
Yeah, I was here to promote Little Women and also a play my sister and Emma's sister Molly did in, that would have been in November as well.
They wrote that play, or this was an adaptation of?
Adaptation of
Chet
Gecko Mystery.
I can't believe I actually remember.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun, and you did some scenes from both of those plays, mm-hmm. respectively, here in Live and Local. We don't have any Shakespearean scenes today, but you guys came along because you've participated in this project in the past. Let me, however, ask Jill to tell us a little bit about the Viola Project. It's actually not based here in Champaign, but based in Chicago.
That's correct. The Viola Project is a nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering young women through the understanding and performance of Shakespeare's plays. It provides a space where gender, race, and age pose no obstacles, where girls can be whoever they want to be, even Hamlet.
Even Hamlet, yeah. And so how did this group decide? Well, first of all, where does the name come from, the Viola Project?
The name of the program comes from Shakespeare's heroine in Twelfth Night, Viola, who is marvelously adept at playing a man and yet in the end does not compromise her wit, her strength, or her feelings one bit in order to get what she wants.
And this is coming from the website for the Viola Project.
Yes.
You can find out a lot more about it. From what you've read there, what made them decide to focus on Shakespeare for girls? I mean, we know why the name certainly works in this case, but why girls? Why not boys?
Well, they say why girls only, and it says studies have shown, especially during the turbulent process of growing up, girls can benefit from an all-female space. The kids just flop around, be free and easy, and with other females, they're more comfortable. And Shakespeare is because they just love the plays. And so that's...
They, meaning whoever organized the project.
Yes. Yeah. Ellie Kaufman and Rihanna Hardy are the founders.
And how did you find out about this?
My daughters and four of their friends attended a workshop in Bloomington that was part of the Illinois Shakespeare Festival. and loved it. They come out laughing, giggling, bubbly. They just went on and on. And so I contacted the organization in Chicago, and this is the third time we've brought them to Champaign.
And what were the – and you were – both you girls were involved both previous times?
Yes.
And what were the plays that focused on then?
In Bloomington, it was Midsummer Night's Dream.
And then the next one that we did in Champaign was we mainly focused on the play Macbeth, but it was like a tragedies sort of themed one.
And then the next one was a comedies themed one where they did Twelfth Night and Comedy of Errors and I think parts of As You Like It as well.
So the one with Macbeth, which is certainly a tragedy. So that was the main one focus, but there were other tragedies sort of mixed in?
Yes, it was sort of a... I mean, they were really focusing on Macbeth and disguises, I think, was sort of the theme and just sort of general Shakespeare tragedies.
So what happens at these events? They're just one-day workshops, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so is the one on this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we start off, they basically do a big warm-up and do vocal warm-ups, do physical warm-ups, and then they do a bunch of exercises, acting exercises.
And then we usually eat lunch, and then after lunch we're given a couple scenes to work on. We're paired up or put in a group, depending on how many people, and given a scene from a play, and then we work on that until the parents come at around 3:30. And then they get to watch us perform those scenes.
So what are the teachers like? I mean, are you supposed to? I've got three questions sort of piled on top of each other. Do you need to have studied these plays before you get there?
No, they usually do even a little brief summary of the play, really, really brief, but just enough to give
when you
kids,
get there.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
When they start talking about whatever play they're doing. They'll tell you what's going on, the important information, and then give us a scene to work on. And it's not like, here's a scene, go do it. They'll come around and they'll talk to you. If you don't understand words, if you don't understand what's going on, they'll help you with that. And they're very, very willing to do whatever it takes so you can understand the play.
How many girls does the workshop allow?
20.
And you do have some openings for
yes,
this one.
Yes, we have 15 signed up. We have 5 more spots. We'd love to fill them.
So do you have, when you're working on the play, which is going to be Much Ado About Nothing this week, in your experience from the two previous ones, Emma and Emily, do they divide up into groups and each of you takes the same scene, or you each group takes a different scene and you work your way through the play, or?
Yeah, each group gets assigned a different scene. It's not necessarily, it doesn't add up to be the entire play, but it's a concise enough scene that you don't need, that the parents don't need any outside information in order to understand what's going on in the scene.
So obviously you're not going to have memorized this.
Right.
By the time the parents get mm-hmm. there at 3:30.
Mm-hmm. We just read it.
And props, costumes?
Nope. Mm-mm. A chair is the only prop. They encourage chairs, but other than that.
And they provide these chairs, I hope.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't have to bring your own chair. Have you looked at or do you plan to look at Much Ado About Nothing before Saturday? Do you get brownie points when you get there if you know anything about the play?
I've already studied the play, so I'll already know a fair amount about it.
Yeah, we're both pretty familiar with most of Shakespeare's works. So.
And how did you get familiar with Shakespeare's works?
By studying them in school and by being in the plays as well.
You're Emma how old?
I'm 15.
And Emily?
I'm 18.
And you're still homeschooled?
Both of us are homeschooled. I'll be starting college this fall.
So your parents obviously included Shakespeare in your courses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And is that because they have particular interest in theater? Because you have a particular interest in theater or theater? Or
I've taken a few literature classes with her mom because she's a literature teacher at Parkland, and she's introduced Shakespeare in a couple of the courses.
And what appeals to you about Shakespeare? Why, having done two of these projects, why another one?
They're a lot of fun, and it's a really informal way to get introduced to the plays. And it is informal, but you always come out thinking about the play in a different way. And that's a lot of fun. And it's always interesting to just, you know, you can play whatever part you want. You know, it can be whatever part they assign you, but you can play Benedict if you want to. Whereas, you know, usually if you're a girl, you get cast as girls' parts. So that's kind of exciting, too.
Mm-hmm. Have you both had boys' parts to play or men's parts to play in the workshops previously?
Yes.
And what do you find you have to do differently to not be a girl?
Well, you do have to be more conscious of how you move and how you talk. You can't just, because with some girl parts, you can just sort of put yourself in it almost. But with guys, you do have to think about it a little bit more. It's not too terribly hard.
You have to imagine how guys might think.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, move around. This is turnabout is fair play, as they say, because in Shakespeare's day, as I understand it, all the parts were played by men.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is really quite fair, it seems, for you to have this opportunity. And how do you deal with the language? I know when the few times I've seen Shakespeare done live, and even when I was in school reading Shakespeare, which I don't know that I've done since I got out of college, I found some of the language difficult to deal with. You know, it can be difficult to understand what are they talking about on stage, or even just reading when you have a chance to look things up and think about it over and over, it can be a challenge.
Well, most of the scenes that they choose, they don't do monologues, and a lot of harder things come up in the monologues where they're just talking to themselves, and scenes that just go back and forth sometimes are easier to understand because one person says one thing and it's obvious that the person is answering a yes or no question or something like that. But sometimes the language can be difficult, and they're willing to help you through that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's beyond these and thous. It's
yeah.
A lot of words that nobody uses today,
mm-hmm.
and puns that Shakespeare would use that you have mm-hmm. to. Do they give you a little history behind some of this?
Not really, unless you ask. Of course, they're always willing to answer questions. But yeah, a lot of the puns and stuff you wouldn't get unless you lived back in Shakespeare's time, and that was something that was commonly understood, but some of them you just don't get.
And you might figure it out as you go along.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and Jill Rannenbarger, somebody wants to sign up for this workshop, what do they need to do?
They could just call me at area code 217-355-8451, and we'll get them all signed up.
Area 217-355-8451. You're going to talk to Jill Rannenbarger about the Viola Project, Shakespeare for Girls. It's a Chicago-based organization that takes these workshops, one-day workshops. Is it just in Illinois, or do they take it across the country as well? Do you know?
Good offhand? Question. I'm not sure.
You can check out more about it in some detail. Viola Project, that's V-I-O-L-A, like the instrument, actually, violaproject.com, and find out the answers to some of the questions and more. 9:30 this Saturday in the morning until 4 in the afternoon at the U of I Champaign County Extension Office. Contact Jill Rannenbarger for more information and to get signed up. There are spots open, $35 a person. That's pretty good for an all-day experience with Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. Thanks to Jill and also Emma Rannenbarger and Emily Pollocky for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Have
Thanks.
Fun on Saturday.
We will.
And coming up, we have the Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor. And I have a weather forecast for you in just a moment, and then classical music beginning at 106. Here is a tune that I used to play on my classical show when I had the classical show, from a set of popular tunes in 17th century England. And this is a song that was mentioned in one of Shakespeare's plays. It's called Calino Castorame and played here by the Broadside Band.